Hello and welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about interesting topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover information from all over the world, and the topics can range from health and wellness to animals or archaeology and even more. The program provides a time out from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest of topics. So please, give a listen. Who knows why it might give you a laugh, cause you to remember something from another era, or even pique your interest like this article by Rebecca Brandis. After son's diagnosis, mom started Cookie Nonprofit to fund kids' cancer research, and now it's raised nearly $2 million. Cookies for Kids Cancer is a powerhouse of a nonprofit. To date, it has funded nearly $20 million into life-saving pediatric oncology research, helping make 25 new treatments available. Volunteers and supporters live in all 50 states and 24 countries and have hosted more than 16,000 fundraising events for the organization. And it all started with a bake sale. In 2007, Gretchen Holt Witt and her husband Larry Witt were told their 2-year-old son Liam had cancer. They were devastated, a feeling that not only intensified when they realized how few safe and effective treatments were on the market and how poorly funded the field was. Today, less than 4% of the National Cancer Institute's research budget is dedicated to pediatric oncology. Holt Witt has a background in public relations. When Liam was diagnosed, she was working as the PR director for home products company OXO, so spreading awareness about something she believed in wasn't a foreign concept to her. I started thinking about what I could do that would be easy, wouldn't take me away from my kids, and was something everyone would love and raise a lot of money, she told Nice News. The holidays were coming up, a time when people scramble for thoughtful and meaningful gifts, and the idea of offering cookies that gave back to cause seemed like a winning idea. The mother of two decided on a lofty goal, selling 96,000 freshly baked cookies and donating the proceeds to fund pediatric cancer research. She arrived at the figure after reading a story that stated Girl Scouts sell an average of 100 boxes of cookies each. At the time, she knew 80 families who had kids with cancer and felt confident that each had 100 people in their network willing to buy a dozen cookies. Next, she rallied over 250 volunteers, including co-workers, local firefighters, fellow parents and friends, and started spreading the word. We had no idea what we were doing, Holt Witt confessed, adding, but we just took it on as a challenge, and we kept moving forward. The group hit their cookie quota within days and then subsequently had to actually bake and ship them, raising $420,000, and realized that they were onto something special. The following year, Holt Witt officially co-founded Cookies for Kids Cancer, encouraging people to get involved and be good cookies. The community-focused ethos is a major element in growing the organization, which empowers individuals to host their own bake sales or any other DIY fundraising events that they dream up. Interested parties simply purchase the cookies online, then sell them. The nonprofit recommends asking for donations rather than putting price tags on the treats, and return the proceeds. That's the thing about this organization that was very intentional. Anywhere, anyone can get involved in whatever capacity they want, Holt Witt emphasized. Each year, we have more than 1,000 grassroots projects hosted by Good Cookies across the country, from bake sales and birthdays to service projects and athletic events. The Tough Cookie Collection features flavors dedicated to special young cancer patients and survivors like Burr, who was diagnosed with stage 4 neuroblastoma at just 4 years old and given a 30% chance at a 5-year survival. Today, after receiving 3 treatments the nonprofit helped fund, he's an Eagle Scout college freshman and 9 years cancer-free. According to Holt Witt, the thing that truly sets Cookies for Kids Cancer apart isn't cookies, but rather its unique grant-making process. to ensure support for early-stage research that has the strongest science behind it. Fund direction is overseen by an independent medical advisory board that guides fund granting through a rigorous peer review process, she explained. Liam fought for 4 years and passed away just shy of his 7th birthday in 2011, his mother shared. The first treatment that Cookies for Kids Cancer successfully funded was made possible just 7 months after his death. Since then, thousands of children have received it. I'm driven to help other children fighting cancer because I know it's what Liam would expect, said Holtwit, to make it better for others. This article, written by Rebecca Brandis, after son's diagnosis, mom started Cookie Nonprofit to fund kids' cancer research. Now it's raised nearly $20 million. Our next article is by Allie Mosh and Rebecca Brandis. Librarian compiles lost notes, an item found in library books. Have you ever wondered about whose scrawl is in the margin of your library book, or read a note on the inside cover and imagined who it was for? Sharon McKellar's collection is for you. The librarian compiles items left on shelves and in library books across Oakland, California, from post-it notes to bus tickets, love letters, postcards, photographs, and more, and uploads them to an online database called Found in a Library Book. I had always collected little things I'd found in library books, and I knew other people did that too, McKellar told NPR, later adding, it lets us be a little bit nosy. It's a very anonymous way. It's like reading people's secret diaries, a little bit, but without knowing who they are. She began the library collection about 10 years ago, taking inspiration from Found magazine. That publication was started by a Chicago man back in 2001 after he found a mysterious note on his windshield that was seemingly left for another person. In each issue, the magazine features found notes, pictures, and other memorabilia submitted by readers across the globe. While McKellar's project is not quite so widespread, including only finds from within the Oakland Public Library system, her collection is perhaps equally intriguing and diverse. As of August, there were more than 350 items and counting. One notable find is a fake $100 bill printed specifically to celebrate the 100th birthday of a woman named Mary. It boasts an image of the centenarian along with the words, "In Mary We Trust." Another intriguing keepsake? The 1990 Book of Days Planner, complete with written entries under certain dates and photographs of models sporting the fashion of the time. Other notes the librarian has achieved are sweeter and simpler, like the yellow heart-shaped post-it written to a child named Alicia. It reads, "Sweet dreams, my love bug. Have a good night and sleep well," and is signed with "Love from Mama and Daddy." Speaking to NPR, McKellar explained that the project's fun lies in the imagined life behind each artifact. In the future, she hopes the library will hold a writing contest where people can submit short stories that go along with the items. "I like imagining where these things came from," McKellar told Reuters in September. "It just feels like a really interesting archive of our community, of the city, and the people who use our libraries, and the diversity within those, and just kind of a glimpse of humanity, and who we are all, and how we are all connected." This article, written by Allie Mosh and Rebecca Brandis, Librarian Compiles Lost Notes, an Item Found in Library Books. Continuing with the theme about books, this article is written by Lauren Hando. I Love Books, the social impact organization striving to end illiteracy in kids. The National Center for Education Statistics reports that roughly 1 in 5 U.S. adults are illiterate or possess low literacy skills. I Love Books is on a mission to change that, one book at a time. The social impact organization, founded in 2021, aims to end illiteracy by ensuring that all children have access to books. Through selling apparel and accessories, I Love Books is able to provide new books to youth by investing 50% of its net profits in books and literacy programs. That's according to the website. So far, it has donated over 3,000 books to elementary school students across three Kentucky cities, Louisville, Lexington, and Hazard. One of the barriers to achieving a high literacy capability for kids is that they don't have books in their homes, or they don't have books in their communities. Their schools may not have a lot of books, and if they do, they may not be the types of books that the children want. Founder Jonathan Beatty told Nice News, "If you're a parent and you've got to choose between your meal or rent or whatever bill that you may need to pay and a book, you'll probably choose the prior." Poverty and illiteracy are closely linked, so increasing access to books for future generations could help break that cycle, as reading gives young people access to more information and inspiration. Beatty has witnessed the power of books in his own life. "Books have given me access to information that I would have otherwise never had, including how to build and scale a business and how to wire my brain and think more positively in a world that doesn't necessarily encourage that," he shared, noting that his favorite book is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. For anyone who decides to go on a journey to really fulfill their personal legend, as Coelho says, "I think it's necessary to be able to read and get information from people who've done what you want to do, people who think in a way that you're aspiring to think." To spread literacy among young readers, I Love Books hosts an interactive giveaway called #BooksGiving, in which the organization partners directly with schools and nonprofits to provide books on a quarterly basis. For one of the first giveaways, more than 300 children from the Promise Academy at William Wells Brown Elementary got their own copies of LeBron James' I Promise, which is read at the school each morning. I Love Books also hosts a program called BAM, combining books, art, and music. Instead of just making this about books, we wanted to expand and say, what does it look like for us to focus not just solely on reading and literacy? What if we expanded it to show how literacy gives you the ability to write songs or understand music lyrics better? As an artist, maybe you want to read more about art, or maybe you want to create your own. You're going to need to read to be able to perform at the highest levels in that regard as well, Beatty said. This article written by Lauren Hando, I Love Books, the social impact organization striving to end illiteracy in kids. U.S. Navy building first new hospital ships in 35 years. Rebecca Brandis writes this article. For nearly four decades, the United States Navy has relied on its two massive hospital ships, the USNS Comfort and the USNS Mercy. They provide medical services to the military and support disaster and humanitarian relief worldwide. Now, thanks to an $867 million contract, Alabama-based shipbuilder Austal USA is developing a brand new, optimized fleet for the military branch. The three ships will enable more complex medical procedures and operations to be performed on board, at sea, and underway, the company's CEO Patty Gregg said in a statement. The first, named the USNS Bethesda after the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, is set to begin construction in spring 2025. The legacy hospital ships are capable platforms, but they're slow, Larry Ryder, Austral USA's vice president for business development and external affairs, told the outlet. They have a very deep draft, so they can't access many ports. Often you see in these engagements activities, they're anchored a mile out at sea instead of being able to pull into these smaller ports. Part of a line called Expeditionary Medical Ships, known as EMS, the new models won't replace the Mercy or Comfort, but supplement them on their missions. They'll be faster and smaller, able to sail at speeds of at least 30 knots with a range of 5,500 nautical miles at 24 knots. The improved design includes three operating rooms, a medical laboratory, radiological capability, blood bank, dental, mental health, OBGYN, and primary care, and more. Its smaller size will enable access to shallow ports, and its flight deck will accommodate military aircraft. This first-in-class ship will be state-of-the-art and the Navy's first medical ship in 35 years, said Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro in a May press release. This ship, designed with more expeditious and direct access to diagnostic, specialty, and hospital care, will allow for increased capabilities and health care. Its predecessor ships are monumental in their own right, of course. With 1,000 beds each, the Mercy and Comfort have assisted in major humanitarian and disaster relief missions, including the COVID-19 pandemic. The two ships were ported on opposite sides of the country for stretches of time in 2020, the Mercy in Los Angeles and the Comfort in New York, to serve as hospitals for patients without the virus, allowing local facilities to focus on treating those who were infected. At a ceremony held at the National Naval Medical Center January 8th, Del Toro spoke about the significance of the first new ship's title, noting that the other two ships will also be named after military hospitals. USNS Bethesda will be a floating testament to the work of the men and women who accept orders to this storied institution, including trailblazers in naval medical history like Captain Lucy Ozerin, one of our nation's first female military psychiatrists. She joined the Navy in 1943 and spent a career providing mental health support to service members, veterans, and their families. He added, USNS Bethesda will serve as a beacon of hope and of the American people's enduring friendship to all she and her crew support around the world. Rebecca Brandis wrote, U.S. Navy building first new hospital ships in 35 years. Marika Spitulski writes, meet Landers Gaydosh, a 13-year-old world championship climber who scales ice walls. Meet Landers Gaydosh, an ice-climbing world champion who has competed across the globe by climbing up slippery ice walls with long-handled hammers with blades. In January of 2022, at the Ice Climbing World Youth Championships in Switzerland, he scrambled all the way to the top of an 80-foot-tall ice wall and bested others in his category by 20 seconds. The most impressive part? Landers is only 13 years old. I really enjoy climbing ice because I have to rely on myself, and it's really fun when you get into a rhythm, Landers told Nice News. He added, I also like traveling to climb because I get to see new places, eat different foods, and I get to meet a lot of really cool people from other countries. Though he's still an adolescent, Landers has years of climbing experience under his belt. The young teen, who lives in Salt Lake City, Utah, was first introduced to rock climbing when he was a toddler, thanks to his dad, Jonathan Gaydosh's job at an indoor climbing gym. There, Landers was soon scrambling up walls and loving it. However, climbing on ice didn't start until many years later. In 2021, his coaches approached him about getting into the sport. Up for the chilly challenge, Landers spent a few months training, and an untapped talent became a newfound passion. Landers is a big-picture kind of kid who wants to see things from up above, Jonathan told an NBC affiliate. Soon, his son has qualified for the USA team and went on to compete at the 2020 International Climbing and Mountaineering Federation, known as UIAA, Ice Climbing World Youth Championship in Switzerland. There he won first place, even as a new ice climber and the youngest climber in the competition, surprising himself and his family. Landers has been used to being on top of the game as a rock climber, so going to Switzerland as an underdog took a lot of humility on his part, said Jonathan, who was unable to attend the championships last year. I remember talking to him the night before, and he was feeling a little out of his league. But my wife and I and his coaches made sure not to put any pressure on him. We wanted it to be a good learning experience for him. When asked by AccuWeather about the differences between rock climbing and ice climbing, Landers explained that they are similar with strength, but the techniques are way different. If you can just keep the strength, you can get the technique back really quick. Wondering what keeps this young athlete calm on the ice? He said the keys are deep breathing and thinking to himself. Steady, skilled, and motivated, Landers is now looking ahead to his next goal, I would like to go back to the Ice Climbing World Championships and win again, he said. Marika Spiltulski wrote, Meet Landers Gaidash, a 13-year-old world championship climber who scales ice walls. Rebecca Brandis writes, biodegradable, single-use, tab soap could make hand washing more accessible worldwide. If there is one beneficial habit the COVID-19 pandemic helped reinforce for many of us, it's hand washing. The practice is critical when it comes to staying healthy. An estimated 1 million deaths could be prevented annually if everyone regularly washed their hands. Unfortunately, in some under-resourced areas where soap and water aren't as easily accessible, residents don't always do so consistently. A team of UK researchers has set out to address that issue, though developing an affordable tab soap that could make hand washing more feasible around the world. The biodegradable single-use product consists of tear-off tabs of soap that come in either a roll or a tear-and-share version that can be mounted in public areas. When water is added to the small cloth, a sudsy lather is created. Made with an absorbent bamboo-based textile, the tabs can be tossed into a pit latrine without creating excess waste. Thus far, the soap has been tested in rural and urban adjacent parts of Tanzania, challenging settings because they have few ecological, economic, or technological resources, as well as a lack of behavioral compliance despite widespread awareness of the need for hand washing with soap. Indeed, a 2020 study determined that only 13% of households in a typical small town in Tanzania had a hand washing station present, while a 2016 study found that only 7% of households nationally had a fixed place to wash with soap and water. The team engaged directly with residents to understand their motivations and their behavior around hand washing, using that information to develop their soap. All of the households chosen to pilot the product had no private or piped on-site water connection, and each had at least one child under the age of 5 and at least one child over the age of 5. Our research confirmed high knowledge and awareness of hand washing, even in remote areas. However, several barriers hindered actual hand washing practice. Study co-author Wexton Baxter told us. He noted that soap had to serve several purposes in one household, including bathing, laundry, and dishwashing, and it was not often conveniently located, and residents feared cross-contamination when sharing it with others after bathroom visits. Baxter and his colleagues presented each household in the pilot with 5 soap products prototypes to try and rank. Tab soap was clearly seen as the most modern and equally seen to be useful for hand washing. Everyone could get access to soap and water, and all have been taught the importance and method of washing their hands. Baxter elaborated, Our focus was redesigning soap itself to encourage hand washing with soap. He added that the soap incorporates several behavioral sites to create a meaningful interaction, and noted that it's made only for hand washing, so it clearly connotes the desired behavior and cannot be easily used for anything else. His team's research included insight on how the product could be marketed and sold, emphasizing that it would be targeted at low-income residents who are susceptible to contracting cholera. Their next steps? We want to partner with organizations to trial the production, distribution, and repeated purchase of the product at a large scale, Baxter said. When linked to a successful business model, Tab Soap could be a clear public health success with an associated sustainable financial model. This article, written by Rebecca Brandis, biodegradable single-use Tab Soap could make hand washing more accessible worldwide. And since we're coming to the conclusion of the program today, I'd like to give you this thought for the day. It is from W. Somerset Maugham. The great tragedy of life is not that men perish, but that they cease to love. William Somerset Maugham was an English playwright, novelist, and short story writer whose works were popular throughout the English-speaking world. He gained initial fame for his numerous plays, many of which were hits on London's West Side. He's best known today for his 19 novels, including Of Human Bondage, The Razor's Edge, and The Painted Veil. Perhaps his most quotable work, however, was his 1938 literary memoir, The Summing Up. In it, Maugham touches upon numerous subjects, including his childhood experiences, his career, and thoughts on travel and philosophy. Toward the end of the book, he discusses what he sees as the two types of love. The first is love pure and simple, sexual love, which he argues is transient. It can dwindle and be lost, and is something we humans have often cursed as praised. The second type is what he refers to as loving kindness, which is more enduring, filled with warmth and vitalizing energy. Loving kindness, he concludes, is the better part of goodness. It is the latter type of love we should endeavor never to lose sight of. That's William Somerset Maugham, who wrote, "The great tragedy of life is not that men perish, but that they cease to love." We're now at the end of today's Nice News articles. Please join us again next time when we cover interesting stories on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.